Welcome to the Deadcast.
Again, and welcome to the Deathcast. I am your host, best-selling independent author Ian Totten. I'd like to thank you for joining me on this special pre-Christmas edition of the Deathcast. We're dropping on Christmas Eve, December 24th, 2020. Whatever it is that you celebrate, I hope you're having a wonderful season. This week we're going to be looking at the Fred and Rose West murders that took place in Great Britain in 1970s, the 80s, into the early 90s. But first, the normal plugs. If you would like to help support the Deathcast, you can find me on Patreon as well as PayPal and Venmo at Ian Totten. If you'd like to follow along, I am all over social media. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Author Totten or on Facebook at Ian Totten. Author, you like that page? There's a little tab for groups. You click on that, it will take you right to the Deathcast group. I'd like to give a special shout out this week to Kenny, who is the most arduous supporter of this show. I really appreciate it, and I hope you and your family have a fantastic Christmas. With that being said, get yourself something to drink, sit back and relax. I've got my coffee, I've got my cigarettes. Let's go into the crypt. You might have noticed a little bit of a different trailer this week. That was actually the voice of Fred West, and in it he was discussing murdering his daughter Heather, as well as another one of his victims. That one, he was talking about cutting the woman's body up before placing it underneath the house, as well as his assertion that the spirits of the dead women came up into his body, and also speaking about accusations that had followed him since the late 60s, early 70s about rape. And in that last piece where he was talking about rape, he was actually talking about how he had killed the young woman. We're going to get into all of that shortly. First, however, we need to look at how Fred West and his wife Rosemary, how their crimes came to the attention of authorities. Before I really get into the weeds, I want to give a bit of a disclaimer of sorts. There's going to be some talk of extreme child sexual abuse as well as incest, so if you are the squeamish sort, you might want to check out now. Fred and Rose West lived at 25 Cromwell Street in Gloucester, England, with their 9 children. Fred was sort of a dim-witted man who worked as a handyman. In fact, he was considered quite good at his job. In May of 1992, Fred asked his 13-year-old daughter, Louise, to bring some bottles to a room on the first floor of their home. And not long after, the other children in the house began to hear the girl screaming, "No, don't. Please stop." Later, Fred came back downstairs and the children found her where he had left her, and she was writhing in pain as she sobbed as Fred had raped and sodomized her. Later, after Fred's wife Rose returned home, Louise went and confided to her mother what had been done, and her mother is reported to have said something to the effect of, "Well, you were asking for it." Over the ensuing weeks, Fred continuously abused the girl. He is known to have raped her at least 3 times, with Rose witnessing one of the attacks, after which she followed the bleeding child into the bathroom and said, "Well, what did you expect?" There is some evidence that Fred videotaped one of these rapes, and this would lead to the initial discoveries of the West's lifestyle. Louise told one of her friends about what her father had been doing. The friend told her mother, who consequently contacted police on August 4th. On August 6th, the police searched the Wests' home, claiming that they were looking for stolen property. Instead, they came away with about 100 pornographic videos, some of it commercially made, much of it made by the Wests themselves, as well as various sex toys. Fred's daughter made a full statement to the police, stating that the abuse had begun when she was 11, and her mother had been absolutely indifferent to the girl's plight. As a result of this, the children were all placed in foster homes the following day, after which medical examinations were conducted, where it was found that the children had been both physically and sexually abused. The West children claimed that the mother, Rose, had inflicted most of the physical abuse, while Fred perpetrated the sexual. And they told their children that if they divulged to anyone what had been taking place in the house, they would end up buried under the patio along with their sister Heather. Because of their findings, the police instituted a full-scale investigation, and eventually Fred was arrested and charged with rape and buggery, while Rose was charged with child cruelty, inciting her husband to engage in sex with their daughter, and obstructing the police. While questioning them, the police brought up the whereabouts of their oldest daughter, Heather, and Fred claimed that she was alive and well, although he refused to give a location or even contact information for the girl. Fred did claim that she was supporting herself through prostitution. While Rose initially acted like she knew nothing about Heather's whereabouts before confiding in the police that she had persuaded the girl to leave home lest her siblings find out about her supposed lesbian inclinations. She further claimed to have given Heather $600 as a means to coerce her to leave, and that there had been periodic telephone conversations. Rose was released on condition that she have no contact with her children, while Fred was held in remand. While Fred was awaiting trial, one of their other daughters, Anne Marie, contacted police and gave a false statement as to the abuse she had suffered in the house. She agreed to testify against both of them at the upcoming trial. She also informed the police that she had been unsuccessfully attempting to trace her mother, Rena, as well as her half-sisters, Charmaine and Heather. While they were speaking with Anne Marie and her husband, a man by the name of Chris Davis, the police learned that Heather West had confided to the both of them how unhappy she was shortly prior to her disappearance. Davis did state that he was unaware of the sexual abuse Heather had been dealing with, but he said that he had mentioned possibly confronting Fred and Rose, to which Heather replied, "For Christ's sakes, don't. They'll kill us both," before telling them that they would need to speak to Heather themselves. While all of this was going on, one of the other children, Mae West, spoke with her sister Louise, who did not wish to testify and see their father charged. And this is important because Mae was soon spoken to by the police as well as social services, and she denied having endured any abuse at the hands of either her mother or father. Because of this, the police decided to switch their focus and try and find Heather, which they were unable to do despite an extensive search throughout Britain and Scotland. Because of the children being unwilling to testify against their parents, the case against Fred and Rose West eventually collapsed, and they were acquitted of all charges, although their children did remain in foster care. The police continued their search for Heather, and they began focusing on the family joke about her being buried underneath the patio out behind the house. They also began to retrace Fred's history, and they discovered that Rena and Charmaine, his ex-wife and one of his daughters, had both disappeared in 1971, but that no missing person report had ever been filed on either of them. This led to the police seeking and being granted a search warrant on February 23rd, 1994. The next day, when the police arrived at 25 Cromwell Street and presented Rose with the warrant, she became pale and hysterical, screaming to her eldest son, Stephen, to get Fred. The police also noted that Rose was doing a lot of doublespeak when discussing Heather's disappearance, eventually becoming abusive with the officers when they pointed out the contradictions in her stories. Fred had been working in the town of Stroud that day, and upon learning what was going down at the house, he assured his son Stephen that he would be home shortly, and it would be 3 hours before he arrived home, at which time he informed the family that he would voluntarily offer a witness statement to police regarding Heather's whereabouts. And in this statement, he said that she was alive and well, although involved with a drug cartel, further adding that the story of Heather being buried beneath the patio were rubbish. This did little to dissuade the police, who continued pressing him, to which Fred eventually exploded and said that they were holding a grudge against him for the acquittal of the previous year. According to Stephen West, when the search team left their house that evening, he observed both of his parents talking in hushed tones while they glanced back at the garden. He saw this from an upstairs window. The next morning, when Stephen was getting ready for work, he was confronted by his father, Fred, who informed him that he needed to take care of his mother and sell the house, and that he should go to the papers and try and make as much money as possible, as he had done something really horrible. When the police arrived a few hours later, Fred told them that he wanted to be arrested for Heather's murder and to be taken to the police station, where he would provide a full confession. At 11:15 that morning, Fred admitted to police that he had killed Heather, claiming it was an act of manslaughter. He said that he strangled Heather in a fit of rage, then dismembered her body in the ground floor bathroom with a heavy serrated knife he normally used for cutting slabs of frozen meat. Her remains had been stored in a dustbin as he waited for an opportunity to dig her grave. He insisted that Rose had no knowledge of Heather's murder, claiming he had committed the murder as Rose was dealing with one of her clients. One of the things that came out during all of this was that Rose was a prostitute, and there was an entire floor in the house that was strictly known as Rose's room, where she would take people from the area who came to partake of her services. And Fred would videotape a lot of these acts, and also there were peepholes in the wall through which he could watch his wife engaging in sex acts. One of the things of interest in this case is that a lot of Rose's clients were politicians and members of the local police force. And there has been some speculation, although little proof to back any of this up, that one of the reasons that it took so long for the West family to be found out was because the government already knew what they were up to, but because of the business Rose was running and how, because so many of her clients were in the government, they turned a blind eye to it. At the police station, Fred went on to state that the reason the team had yet to find Heather's remains was because they were looking in the wrong part of the garden. He offered to go back to 25 Cromwell Street with the officers and show them exactly where it is that they could find Heather's body. The children had various responses to the news that their father had confessed to Heather's murder. Some of them entered a state of shock and refused to believe it, while others simply shut down. The next day, which was February 26th, the police began excavating the area of the garden that Fred had stated he buried Heather at. And late in the afternoon, a human thigh bone was found protruding from a section of the garden that Fred insisted police did not need to look in. While further along, in the area Fred had indicated Heather was in, they discovered a mass of human remains encased in a bin bag in intertwined with two lengths of rope. The police took the remains with them to headquarters, where they were determined to belong to a young woman. Various bones were missing from these remains, and they were never found. One thing of note is that the fingernails of this victim were found in a pile, which suggested to the police that they may have been torn from the fingers as a means of torture, which gives us a little bit of insight at this point as to the nature of the man police had in custody, Fred West. But we're going to see this was the least of the atrocities that Fred committed. Anyways, later that night, the remains were formally identified as those of Heather West. That night, Fred was formally charged with Heather's murder, and the police questioned him as to why they had found another thigh bone in the garden. And eventually, Fred admitted that there were two other victims buried in the garden, and stated he would go back with police to show them where exactly he had buried the two of them. Fred said that one of the victims was a woman named Shirley Robinson, who had been a lesbian tenant of theirs, who had also been pregnant with his child at the time of her 1978 murder, and that the other victim was Shirley's mate. The next day, on the 28th, the police found two sets of remains, one of which the thigh bone they had found the previous day was a part of. Fred was charged that evening with two further counts of murder. At this point, we're going to shift the focus of our narrative from the crimes to Fred and Rose West themselves. This is because his victims were known to both Fred and Rose, and in order to understand how they fit into the overall picture, we have to see where they come into their lives as far as a timeline goes. Frederick Walter Stephen West was born on September 29th, 1941, at Bickerton Cottage, Much Markle, Herefordshire. He was the first surviving child born to Walter Stephen West and Daisy Hannah Hill. The Wests were a poor farming family. It's been said that Walter West was a strict disciplinarian, while his wife Daisy was overprotective of her children. In 1946, the family moved to Moorcourt Cottage at Moorcourt Farm, where Walter West worked as a milking herdsman and a harvest hand. Moorcourt Cottage had no electricity and was heated by a log fireplace. I have also read that there was no indoor plumbing and that the family had to use an outhouse. At any rate, by 1951, Hannah West had given birth to 8 children, 6 of whom survived. And while Fred was seen as the favorite of Hannah and a mother's boy, he looked to his siblings for companionship. All of the West children were expected to work on the farm alongside their father. Because of this, Fred developed an extremely strong work ethic. Fred's classmates have described him as dim, scruffy, lethargic, and stated that Fred was regularly in trouble. In fact, around this time, he began a lifelong obsession with petty theft. Fred was known around town to be very skilled at woodworking and other manual labor. When he left school at the age of 15, he was scarcely literate. Now, during interviews with police, he claimed that he had been introduced to sex by his mother, to have engaged in acts of bestiality with animals in his early teens, and that his belief in incest stemmed from his father claiming that it was a normal activity that all fathers partook in. These claims, however, were refuted by Fred's younger brother, Doug. And Doug said in part that it was all fantasy in Fred's mind. None of these things ever happened. What is known is that by 1957, Fred and his brother John began to frequent a social youth club in nearby Ledbury, where Fred's Herefordshire accent marked him as a country bumpkin. Now, people who were in the area at the time remember Fred as being aggressive towards the young woman who used to go to this social club and other areas that teenagers hung out in. He was constantly pestering them, with some saying that it was apparent that Fred had objectified women and saw them as nothing more than sex objects. He was known on the local scene as someone who would walk up to a girl and just suddenly start fondling her, no matter who was around or what was said in objection to this. So we can already see some sexual deviancy starting to come to the forefront in Fred's life. But it was to get worse. At the age of 17, he bought a motorcycle, much to his mother's chagrin. And 2 months after purchasing it, he suffered a fractured skull, a broken arm, and a broken leg in an accident. Now, the story I have read is that Fred was trying to pester a girl who had accused him of rape, and that he, in fact, had tried to run her down on the motorcycle and ended up getting into an accident because of this. He was unconscious for 7 days and walked with braces for a number of months afterwards, and it's been said that he began to show an extreme shift in personality after this accident. He would never willingly go back to a hospital after this, and he also had fits of rage that came out of nowhere. He would suffer another head injury 2 years later when, out on a fire escape, he attempted to grope a girl, and she either punched or shoved him, and he fell off of this fire escape, falling 2 floors before hitting the ground. In December of 1960, Fred began molesting his 12-year-old sister, Kitty, and in June of the following year, Kitty, now age 13, confided to her mother that he had been raping her and that she had become pregnant. Fred was arrested that month, and he freely admitted to the actions he had taken against his sister, stating, "Doesn't everybody do it?" He was thrown out of the house because of this, although his mother, Daisy, was prepared to testify in his defense. The case eventually collapsed, and Fred ended up moving in with an aunt in the village of Much Markle. By the next year, however, he had reconciled with his family and moved back in with them, although many of his family members had disowned him because of this incident. Now, in 1960, a woman named Catherine Rena Costillo had come into Fred's life. She was from Coatbridge, Lancashire, and she had met Fred at a dance hall in 1960. The two of them had dated for a few months, and it was known that she dabbled on the side in prostitution. Now, in September of 1962, she came back to Much Markle, pregnant with the child of a Pakistani bus driver. It's been speculated that she had left home this time because her family were displeased that she was set to have a mixed-race child. She and Fred ended up getting married on November 17th in Ledbury. They eventually moved to Coatbridge, where Fred took on work as an ice cream van driver. Rena's daughter, Charmaine, was born in March of 1963, and they gave a number of different reasons to explain Charmaine's mixed ancestry, with the most common being that Rena had suffered a miscarriage, and because of this, they had decided to adopt a child. So there's already a lot of deceit going on in Fred's life at this point, as well as his deviant sexual behavior. Fred and his family ended up relocating to the Savoy Street, Bridgeton district of Glasgow. And in July of 1964, Rena gave birth to a daughter named Anne Marie. It was Fred's first biological child. Around this time, Fred and Rena were able to hire a nanny, Isa McNeil, who said that although Rena was a considerate mother, she struggled to raise the two girls, and that Fred treated the two girls awfully. He had constructed a cage on the bottom bunk of a bunk bed, and they were only allowed out of their cage when Fred was away at work. During this period of time, a young woman named Anne McFall came into the West Sphere, and eventually she and Fred would begin a relationship. Fred is known to have engaged in a number of extramarital affairs during this period of time, and it was because of these that Rena began an affair of her own with a man by the name of John McLaughlin. One story that's been bandied about is that at one point Fred walked in on Rena McLaughlin and he began to beat Rena, which prompted McLaughlin to hit Fred, after which Fred drew a knife and grazed McLaughlin's abdomen. When McLaughlin hit Fred a second time, he stopped defending himself. John McLaughlin later stated that Fred had no problem hitting a woman, but if a man stood up to him, he would back down and cower like a dog. And this happened on numerous occasions. Every time that McLaughlin would find a new bruise on Rena, he would go and beat Fred. Another story from this period of time comes from McLaughlin, who stated that at one point when Charmaine was a toddler, she asked Fred for an ice cream from his truck, and in response, Fred cuffed her about the head until McLaughlin stepped in and began to beat Fred. So it seems like, you know, there's this whole Jerry Springer dichotomy going on in Fred and Raina's marriage, with this guy McLaughlin being involved, and Fred is beating his wife and children. McLaughlin is beating Fred. On November 4th of 1965, Fred accidentally ran over and killed a boy in Glasgow with his ice cream truck, and he was eventually cleared of any wrongdoing by police. Fearing the reaction he would receive from the people of Glasgow, however, Fred took Charmaine and Anne Marie and returned to Gloucester, where he rented a small caravan at the Timberland Caravan Park in Bishop's Cleeve. Rena joined not long after in February of 1966, accompanied by Issa McNeil and Anne McFall. Not long after they were all reunited, Fred found a job driving a truck for a local slaughterhouse. Around this period of time, Fred began to exert his dominance over McNeil, McFall, as well as Rena, and would beat the women on multiple occasions. It's also been speculated that around this time, he began to sexually abuse Charmaine, while at the same time encouraging Rena to return to prostitution in order to help the family's financial situation. While all of this was going on, Fred was unaware that Rena had been in contact with her old boyfriend, McLaughlin, asking him to help rescue her, the two older women, as well as her children, and they set a plan into motion wherein McNeil's boyfriend, John Trotter, would come to Bishop Cleeve to take all of them away. Unbeknownst to the others, however, Anne McFall had become infatuated with Fred, and as I stated earlier, they had begun a relationship, and Red is supposed to have told her numerous times that he would marry her, and Anne McFall ended up ratting the other women out to Fred. On the day of the planned escape, Fred arrived and was said to be oddly calm, as he stated that he and Anne McFall would be staying there with the children and that the others could go. A fight ensued, during which Fred was struck a number of times. Eventually, the police became involved, and Rena, Isa, and the two women's boyfriends were allowed to leave. Fred is supposed to have told Rena that if he ever saw her again, he would kill her. Now, Rena attempted to remain in contact with her daughters, returning often to visit them. And although she was friendly with Anne McFall at first, she soon began to resent the younger woman. And it makes you wonder if she wasn't suffering from some sort of battered woman syndrome, because she knew that Fred was a dangerous individual, yet despite this, she kept going back into the situation. Eventually, Rena ended up stealing some items from Fred and going home, at which point she was arrested and was returned to Gloucester to face trial. She was sentenced to 3 years of probation. During the trial, Fred testified, and he admitted that he and McFall were living together, but he falsely claimed that McFall would be going back to Scotland in the not-too-distant future. McFall ended up moving into her own caravan at Bishop's Cleeve, as Rena split her time between living with Fred and going back to Glasgow. Letters have been found from this time in which Anne McFall states that she really believes that she will have a better life should Fred divorce his wife and instead marry her. And it was obvious that she was completely head over heels in love with him despite his violent, domineering personality. And because of all of this, Anna would attempt to persuade Fred on numerous occasions to divorce Rena Costello. In late 1966 or early 1967, Anne McFall became pregnant with Fred West's child, and in July of 1967, she vanished without a trace. Unsurprisingly, given the life that she was living, as well as the times, Anne McFall was never reported missing. Fred first met Rosemary Letts in 1969, shortly after Rosemary turned 15. Rosemary came from a troubled background. She was born on November 29th of 1953 to Bill Letts and Daisy Fuller. She was the fifth of seven children, and it's said that her mother suffered from depression during the pregnancy and underwent electroshock therapy because of this depression, with some speculating that this may have caused some unknown injuries to the unborn fetus. Rose was said to be a moody and precocious child, and she was prone to daydreaming and performed poorly at school. When she was a teenager, her parents separated, and she went to live with her mother before moving back in with her father at the age of 16 in Bishop's Cleeve. Bill Letts was said to be a violent schizophrenic who would repeatedly abuse his daughters, both sexually and physically, and this, I'm sure, played a large part in Rose's adolescence, as it's been said that she was fascinated by her body once she reached puberty and would parade around the house naked or semi-naked in front of her younger brother. At the age of 13, Rose began sneaking into her brother's room at night, where she sexually molested him, as well as her other brother, Gordon. When she met Fred West in 1969, West was 27 years old. Fred seemed to become infatuated with Rose from the instant they met at a bus stop, and she has said that she initially was repulsed by him and suspected he was probably a homeless man. Eventually, this repulsion turned to flattery at the attention Fred gave her, and she turned him down on a number of occasions for a date, but would allow him to accompany her home. Fred learned that Rose worked at a local bakery, and he convinced a uninterested third party to go into the bakery and give Rose a gift, saying that it was from a man outside. And shortly after this, Fred entered the bakery and asked Rose to go on a date with him, which she accepted. Now, initially, Rose treated Fred's daughters kindly, as she saw that both of them were severely neglected. She eventually became Fred's full-time nanny. She and Fred worked out a deal wherein he would give her enough money to give to her parents to convince them that she was still working at the bakery. Eventually, Rose introduced Fred to her parents, and purportedly they both disliked him immensely upon first meeting, with Bill Letts threatening to call social services on Fred if he continued to see his daughter. Rose's parents forbid her from seeing Fred, which she obviously ignored, and eventually her parents went to social services and informed them that Fred was having a sexual relationship with their daughter and had begun prostituting her out of his caravan. So Rose was taken from her family home and put into an approved school where she was not allowed out without proper authorization, and the few times that she was allowed to leave the school, she would go and visit Fred despite being warned that these excursions were only to go visit her family. Rose was released from the approved school on her 16th birthday, during which time Fred was serving a 30-day jail sentence for stealing and unpaid fines. And he had moved out of the caravan park at this point. Social services had become involved and taken his daughters. And when Fred got out of jail, Rose immediately moved in with him. And not long after, they retrieved Charmaine and Anne-Marie from the social services. Rose's father made one final attempt to remove Fred from their lives by again contacting the police. Rose was examined by a doctor who found that she was pregnant, and once more Rose was placed into a care home. Eventually, Rose was released with the understanding that she never see Fred again and that she terminate the pregnancy. Instead, Rose went to live with Fred, and because of this, Rose's father forbid her from ever coming into the house again. A few months after this, they moved into a house in Midland Road, Gloucester. On October 17, 1970, Rose gave birth to the couple's first child, a daughter they named Heather Ann. And there is some speculation that Heather may have in fact been the biological daughter of Rose's own father. Now, Charmaine and Anne-Marie had already been instructed that they were to refer to Rose as their mother. And by the time that Rose had turned 17, Fred was in jail once more, serving a 6.5-month sentence for stealing. And it's important to note here that Rose's demeanor towards the girls had changed considerably from what it had once been, with Anne-Marie stating that while she had at one point been a loving, caring woman, Rose had become demeaning and abusive to the girls. Anne-Marie further went on to state that while she herself was submissive to Rose's demands, her older sister Charmaine refused to have her spirit broken and would stand up to Rose, often stating that her mother would be coming to rescue her soon. Charmaine would also antagonize Rhodes by saying things such as, "My real mummy wouldn't yell and scream at us." One incident that has survived from this period is that one of Charmaine's friends, a young girl named Tracy, who lived in the upper flat of Midland Road, recalled that she went to the West's home at one point, only to find Charmaine naked and standing on a chair, with a gag in her mouth and her hands bound behind her back with a belt, as Rose stood alongside with a large wooden spoon in her hand. According to Tracy, Charmaine had been unconcerned, while Anne-Marie stood in a doorway with a blank expression on her face. Now, on March 28th, 1971, Charmaine was admitted to the Gloucestershire Royal Hospital with puncture wounds to her left ankle, which Rose put off as being the result of a household accident. It doesn't appear that there was any investigation into this. Remember, this was a different time, and things like this were often ignored by the people working in the hospital. Now, on June 24th, 1971, Fred was set to be released from prison. And on the 15th of that month, it is known that Rose brought all three of the girls to visit Fred. However, somewhere between the 15th and the 24th, Charmaine West was murdered. Now, there's been some speculation as to when she actually died. Forensic pathologists have stated that she did die somewhere before Fred was released. Charmaine's friend Tracy's mother gave testimony at the trial that they had moved, and that at some point she had come back for her daughter to visit Charmaine, only for Rose to respond that the child had gone to live with her mother and a bloody good riddance. She is known to have told anybody who would ask about the child's whereabouts that Charmaine had gone to live with her mother, that Raina had come calling and taken the girl to live with her in Bristol, while also telling the staff at Charmaine's school that Raina had collected the child and taken her to London. Now, when Fred was released from prison, according to Anne West, he told the young girl that her mother had come and gotten her older sister, and when Anne asked why she had been left behind, Fred is reported to have said, "She wouldn't want you, love, you're the wrong color." During this entire period, Charmaine's body was stored in the coal cellar at Midland Road, and when Fred was released, he buried the girl's body close to the back door. As with the bodies that were eventually found at 25 Cromwell Street, when Raina's body was discovered, it was bisected at the hips and there was also bones that were missing. Sometime in August of 1971, Raina West showed up in order to collect her children. This is noted as the last time Raina was seen alive. It's been said that Fred strangled her in the back of his car. When Raina's body was discovered, there was a short piece of metal tubing alongside her body, and it's speculated that she had been tied up and subjected to severe sexual torture at the hands of Fred and Rose. Her body was discovered near a cluster of trees known as the Yew Tree Coppice at Letterbox Field, which is roughly 1 mile from Much Markle. She had been dismembered and placed into plastic bags prior to being buried. On January 29th of 1972, Fred and Rose got married. On the application, Fred wrote that he was a bachelor. Something of interest to note here is that there were no friends or family present at the wedding, save for Fred's brother John, who acted as a witness and best man. Not long after this, Rose was pregnant with their second children, and they moved from Midland Road to 25 Cromwell Street. Brett eventually purchased the house, which they had rented from the Council of Gloucestershire, and he paid $7,000 for it. In order to accommodate this purchase, Brett converted the upper stories of the three-story home into what in Britain is called a bedsit, which is basically a boarding house, where you get a room and then you and everyone else who lives there share a bathroom and cooking facilities. Not long after they moved into the home, Rose gave birth to another girl. This child they named May June West. And quickly after this, Rose began working as a prostitute. One of the rooms in the upstairs of 25 Cromwell Street was turned into her own personal. They advertised the services that Rose offered in what's called a contact magazine, which is similar to a swingers magazine. She was encouraged by Fred to look for clients in Gloucestershire's West Indian community, and it's also known that she engaged in casual sex with both male and female lodgers inside the household and anybody that Fred happened to bring home with him. Rose is known to have told people that there was no man or woman alive who was able to sexually satisfy her. And it has been noted in a number of places that when she was engaged in sex with a woman, Rose became extremely brutal with her partners, oftentimes partially suffocating them or using dildos on them that began small before escalating to the point that the women were in tears and bleeding from both their vaginal and anal regions. Rose is known to have said to anyone who complained about the treatment that they received that they obviously weren't woman enough to take it. In addition to all this, Fred is known to have participated in three ways with his wife and these women. The Wests were known to enjoy particularly brutal bondage, and in fact, when the police raided their home with the search warrant, they found a number of devices that were used in this, as well as an extensive collection of videotapes depicting bestiality and child sexual abuse. Inside the family dynamic, Rose controlled their finances, spending much of her time in the area of the house that had become dubbed as Rose's room. And as stated at the beginning, Fred took a particular devious pleasure in watching his wife engage in sexual acts with strangers. He would videotape as well as watch the encounters through peepholes. Eventually, he installed a baby monitor in the room so that he could listen to what was going on anywhere in the house. He installed a private bar inside the room, as well as a light that would let anyone who came upon the door know that she was not to be disturbed. He also installed a separate doorbell and door into the house to facilitate her clients. The majority of the money that they earned through Rose's business was spent on home improvements. By 1977, Rose's father, Bill, had come back into the picture, and it seems he and Fred had some sort of begrudging respect for each other in that they opened a cafe, which failed not long after its grand opening. But he also began partaking of Rose's prostitution services, and it's speculated that Bill Letts was the father of a number of Rose's other children, as by 1983 she had given birth to 8 total children, 3 of whom are known to be the children of Rose's clients. Fred seems to have accepted these children as his own, and if anyone ever brought up that the children did not look at him in any way, shape, or form, he would inform them that that was because his great-grandmother had been a black woman. Now, Fred and Rose attempted to portray themselves as doting parents. In fact, there's a number of videos online and various documentaries of them taking the entire family out for outings in parks and other areas where they would go hiking and looking at flowers. But obviously, the reality at home was much different. When the children turned 7, they were each given a list of chores, and any failure to not follow through on these chores or to not do them to Rose's expectations would result in severe beatings. They were also not allowed to socialize outside of the house unless Fred and Rose were present. And their children have said that Rose was the disciplinarian of the household. Fred generally did not engage in the physical abuse. However, he was the major perpetrator of the sexual abuse that they would all receive. Over the course of one decade, 1972 to 1992, the West children ended up in the hospital at least 32 times with various injuries that were all explained as household accidents. One story told by Stephen West is that he was mopping the kitchen floor one day and Rose accidentally stepped into the bucket he had been using for water, and Rose hit him over the head, knocking him to the floor before she began to kick him in the chest, screaming at him that he had done it on purpose. Another incident involves Rose becoming enraged at Mae West and taking a knife to the child, lightly scouring her chest and ribcage area until it was covered in fine scratch marks. While the child screamed and begged for mercy, even Fred was not immune to his wife's violent outbursts. She attacked him on a number of occasions, which the most prevalent one that you can find online is her chasing him through the house in 1974 with a large butcher knife. Fred was able to barricade himself in a room, and Rose slammed the knife into the wall, her hand sliding down the handle and her fingers over the blade. She ended up having to get stitches, telling Fred, "Look what you done, fella. You've got to take me to the hospital now." Now, as stated at the beginning of the episode, there were going to be extremely graphic depictions of the abuse that the children suffered, specifically at the hands of Fred West, and while I've gone into some of it, we're going to delve into it a little bit deeper here. As the oldest surviving child is Anne Marie West, and she has claimed that her father began abusing her early on, and that Rose would begin partaking in this often, binding her to objects while encouraging Fred to rape her, which he often would do. She would also make the child do household chores while wearing various sexual devices and provocative outfits. This again in order to entice Fred to assault the child. At the age of 13, they began to prostitute Anne Marie, telling prospective clients that she was 16 years old, and Rose would remain present in the room while these rapes took place. One particular incident from this time involves Rose taking Anne Marie with her to a local bar where they had a few drinks, after which Fred collected them both. Once inside the car, Rose screamed at Anne Marie, demanding to know if she thought that she was her friend, after which both Rose and Fred beat and sexually abused the child. Now, I know you're thinking that all of this was going on and the police had no idea of it, but that's actually not the case. In October of 1972, a young woman, a 17-year-old by the name of Carolyn Owens, was hired as the children's nanny. They had found her hitchhiking, She eventually moved into the house at 25 Cromwell Street. Rose explained her prostitution of the young woman in that she was a masseuse and that the people who were coming by the house were her clients. Fred was almost instantly interested in Owens, and she noted to friends that he constantly talked about having sex with women, and he also informed her that he did abortions, you know, should she ever find herself in a situation where she needed to have one performed. Eventually, the Wests began to try enticing Owens into their sexual escapades, which she declined before announcing that she was moving out and returning to her family. On the 6th of December 1972, the Wests convinced Owens to get into their vehicle, where they apologized for their conduct and offered her a lift home. They claimed that they wanted to have a girl's chat with her, during which time Rose began to fondle her, as Fred questioned her as to whether she'd had sex with her boyfriend that evening. Owens protested against what was being done to her, as well as the way the conversation was going, at which point Fred stopped the car and beat her into unconsciousness before they bound and gagged her. She was driven back to Cromwell Street, where she was sexually assaulted by both Fred and Rose, with Rose making a statement as to the unusualness of Owen's clitoris. The next morning, Fred told her that they would keep her restrained and he would sell her to his quote-unquote black friends to do with as they pleased. Fred informed her that she had been brought to the house specifically for Rose's sexual gratification, and long story short, she agreed to become a part of their extended family and even helped clean the house that day. Later on, she and Rose went to a laundromat where, seeing her chance at escaping, Owens took off. Eventually, Owen's mother, who had noticed the marks on her daughter's body, questioned her over what had happened, and Owens admitted the entire sordid affair. The Wests were arrested on numerous charges, but eventually the case was all but dismissed when Owens decided she could not testify in open court. The Wests ended up getting charged with indecent assault causing actual bodily harm. They pled guilty to this and each of them were fined $50 before being released. And it's been reported that when Owens found out about what had happened, she attempted to commit suicide. In early 1973, the Wests committed their first known murder as a couple. It was a young 19-year-old named Linda Gow, who had become an acquaintance of the Wests through one of their male lodgers. She eventually moved into the family's house. She disappeared at some point, and when the other lodgers asked what had become of her, the Wests explained that she had been forced to leave after Gow hit one of their children, although it was noted that Rose was seen wearing Linda's clothing on a number of different occasions. Gal's body was eventually found underneath the house on Cromwell Street, and her jaw and head were completely wrapped in adhesive and surgical tape, and the police speculated this was done in order to silence her screams. Two small tubes had been inserted into the nasal cavities to allow breathing, while long sections of string and a knotted fabric were discovered tied to various parts of her body. It's been speculated that Linda had been suspended from a wooden beam in the basement. During his confessions, Fred admitted that he had devised this method in order to torture his victims while they hung in the air. Linda Gao, it's speculated, died from either strangulation or suffocation. Much like the other victims discussed already, Linda's body had been dismembered and there were bones missing from her corpse. It's likely that Fred kept these as some form of a keepsake of the killings, although none of these bones have ever been discovered. Another victim discovered underneath the house was 15-year-old Carol Ann Cooper, who went missing on November 10th of 1973. She was abducted from a bus station, and much like Linda Gao, she was suspended from a beam in the basement, her head wrapped in tape, her arms and legs bound, before being sexually assaulted. There were four other victims who were found at the Cromwell Street home. All of them seemed to have suffered similar fates, with tape on the bones, the binding, the cutting off of limbs, teeth extracted on a couple of occasions, fingernails pulled out. Fred seemed to take great pleasure in inflicting the most absolute horrible pain he could on his victims. A number of these victims were found inside the basement underneath a concrete slab that Fred had put down sometime after April of 1975. And this area that was concreted over was converted into a bedroom for his oldest children. After this murder in 1975, it seems that Fred went through a pretty long cooling off period that lasted until May of 1978, when he murdered an 18-year-old lodger named Shirley Robinson. She had been living with them since April of 1977 and was heavily pregnant at the time of her murder. During this point, Rose would tell neighbors that Shirley was pregnant with Fred's child. Rose herself was pregnant at this point. Shirley eventually disappeared, and it's been speculated that this was done out of a resentment Rose had towards the young woman, and that Fred had done this in order to keep some form of acrimony inside the household. It was noted upon discovery of Shirley's body that the fetus had been removed from her body, and that there were bones missing from this fetus. Also of note is the fact that Shirley, unlike the others, had not been restrained in any manner that the police could determine, so they speculate that a sexual motive was not present in this case. And my own opinion, the fact that a sexual motive wasn't present in the murder makes it more likely that Rose herself killed the young woman, with Fred disposing of the body afterwards. The final murder that they had committed with a sexual motive took place on August 5th of 1979. It was a 16-year-old named Allison Chambers who had run away from a local children's home to be the West's live-in nanny. It appears she lived with them for a few weeks before she was brutally murdered. And Fred and Rose went to great lengths to cover up the murder of this girl. In fact, they even posted a letter to her parents from a Northamptonshire post office box. During the years prior to this, Fred had almost exclusively focused his sexual deviations inside the house to his daughter, Anne-Marie. Anne-Marie eventually ran away from home, at which point Fred turned his attention to Heather and Mae West. Fred often told the girls that he had made them and therefore he could do to them what he wanted. Of the two, Heather seems to have been affected the worst by this abuse. She was seen as listless and fidgety, oftentimes sitting quietly while rocking back and forth, which is a telltale sign of sexual abuse. At one point, Heather complained to her mother about the abuse, and Rose laughed at the girl. Because of the effects it had on Heather, both Rose and Fred began to taunt the girl, thinking that she was possibly a lesbian. This increased the abuse that the couple lavished on her. Eventually, Rose's activities as a prostitute began to circulate around town, and Heather eventually confided into a number of friends that the stories that they were hearing were true, but that there was a lot more that they didn't know. Events with Heather eventually reached a boiling point after she graduated from high school. She expressed desire in getting a job that would allow her to travel, and eventually she put in for one of these jobs, and when she got a rejection letter in the mail, it's said to have absolutely devastated her. According to May, it completely took the life out of her sister. May went on to say that by the next morning, Heather was back to her normal self, biting her nails, sitting and rocking back and forth while sitting on the couch. When the children returned home that afternoon, there was no sign of Heather, and they were told that she had left to accept the job that she had been denied the previous day. While Rose told a neighbor that she and Heather had had a hell of a row, and that her daughter had run away from home. The Wests further went on to state that the reason Heather refused to contact any of them after she disappeared was because she had run away with a lesbian lover. Eventually, this morphed into Heather had become engaged in prostitution, and also that she was running drugs. Following Heather's disappearance is when Fred began to jokingly tell the children that if they misbehaved, they would end up underneath the patio like their sister had. Which brings us back to Fred's confession. The police had decided, after finding the three sets of human remains, to rip up the entire area around Cromwell Street in the search for bodies. And Fred stated that most of the girls were hitchhikers he had found during the 1970s, and that Rose had had nothing to do with any of the murders, but that he had killed the women after they threatened to reveal his infidelity to his wife. Of the dismemberment, Fred West said it had made it easier for him to bury the bodies. And despite Fred's insistence that Rose had had nothing to do with any of the murders, she was arrested on April 20th of 1994 on the offense of rape of an 11-year-old girl and the physical assault of an 18-year-old boy, both charges dating from the 1970s. She was placed in Puckle Church Prison, where eventually on April 25th, Rose was charged with the murder of Linda Gall. On May 6th of that year, both of them were charged with 5 counts of murder, with Rose replying, "I'm innocent," upon hearing each charge. When formal charges were laid against them, Fred West was charged with 11 murders, Rose West with 9. During all of this, Fred had repeatedly attempted to reach out to his wife, but Rose was not having any of it. She had, in fact, taken on the airs of a grieving mother, and this eventually led Fred to recant his earlier confessions of having acted alone, and he began implicating Rose in every one of his murders, with the exception of Ann McFall, who he claimed Rena had killed. It was noted at the time that Fred seemed to be extremely depressed and despondent over his wife's rejection of him. And on January 1st of 1995, Fred West hung himself with an improvised rope constructed from a blanket and tags inside his cell. Basically, Fred West hung himself from a door handle inside his cell. He left a suicide note in which he expressed undying love for Rose, claiming that he would wait for her on the other side. Rose West was convicted on November 21st and 22nd of 10 murders. She was given a life sentence, with the judge insisting that she never be released. To this day, Rose maintains her innocence. Something of interest here is that while Fred and Rose West are known to have killed only 12 victims, authorities don't believe that's the actual number. In fact, Fred initially confessed to over 30 murders, although to date, no further victims have been found. One of the reasons for this is the area they suspect additional victims are buried in is next to the Midland Roadhouse, where Fred had rented a large area for gardening, although he gardened a small portion of the land with actual fruits and vegetables. The majority of it seemed to be largely untouched, and when questioned about it, Fred would state that this was for special gardening. This area has subsequently been paved over as part of a highway. It's also been speculated that Fred's murderous career began well before he met Rose West, possibly when he was living in Much Markle, even before he met Rena Costello, as there were a number of unsolved missing persons cases involving young girls, although it's doubtful we will ever know of any further victims. That's it for this week. There are a couple other conspiracy theories involving the West family, but I've gone quite a bit over the 1 hour mark, and looking at my software, I'm about to reach my file limit size, so, you know, maybe I'll do another double dip at some point on this and spend a couple minutes on the Wests. But that is it for the Deathcast this week. If you enjoy the show, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you find your favorite podcasts. Enjoy your Christmas, a time with your family, and until next week, stay safe and stay morbid.